Hello, this is Joan with the Bloomington Normal Pantograph dated Thursday, August 16th, 2018. We will begin today's reading with the article headlined, Redbirds Flock Together to Ease Move-In at ISU. Volunteers help as 6,100 students land in dorms this week. By Kevin Barlow. Normal. Gabby Del Real, a sophomore biology major from Naperville, was working up a sweat just outside Waterson Towers on Wednesday morning. And she wasn't even moving in. Instead, she was among the many student volunteers, dubbed Curb Birds, helping other students move into the residence hall that is marking its 50th anniversary this year. "I like helping because I like to be a leader and make them feel welcome," said Del Real, taking a break from wrapping cellophane around the bags and boxes of a student heading toward the Waterson elevator. "It's a good opportunity to give back to the community, meet new people, and make them feel comfortable." The annual invasion will involve around 6,100 students who will be moving into on-campus housing this week, with most of them arriving in town Wednesday and Thursday. Students have been assigned move-in dates and times depending on their housing assignment. "I'm a little early, but that's because rain is coming, and I'm excited to get in anyway," said Charlotte Howe, a freshman from Champaign. Many of the students moving in called the experience nerve-wracking, such as Reed Vanderheiden of Geneseo, who had plenty of help from his family, including his mother Martha, a sister Abby, his father Jim, and his 11-year-old brother Cooper. "It's just the first time moving away from home, and there are a lot of new things to get used to and find out on your own," he said. Nerve-wracking was also the term Doreen Fermaniak of Springfield used as she was moving her daughter, Sydney, into Waterson. "She had a little breakdown last night, and, of course, that led me to have a breakdown as well," she said. "But I think we are past all of that now, although I am sure I will have another one when I leave and on the way home." Moving his son, Brandon, into Hewitt, Bill Starr of Rockford was also a little nervous. "He's just a freshman, and it seems like just yesterday he was starting kindergarten," he said. "But this is one of those days you think about when they are born, and so it doesn't seem real, but it is." Brandon appeared to be less nervous. "This was absolutely the longest summer ever," Brandon said. "I was already packed and ready a week ago." Some returning students living in Hewitt, Manchester, or Cardinal Court began move-in on Monday, but approximately 60% of the resident hall residents, which include students in Hewitt, Manchester, Waterson, Wright, Wilkins, and Haney, are scheduled to move in Wednesday and Thursday. "It's always a little bit chaotic, but it's under control," said Stephanie Robertson, Assistant Director for Marketing and Assessment for University Housing Services. All Waterson residents received a custom T-shirt to celebrate the 50th anniversary of the opening of what was then the tallest residential dorm in the country. "It's technically our newest hall," she said. "There are places, such as Cardinal Court, that were built after, but as far as residence halls, nothing new has been built since this one." More celebrations are planned for homecoming weekend in mid-October, she said. Meanwhile, temporary traffic patterns and some street closures will be in effect through Friday in the area around campus. North Street will be one way east from School Street to Fell Avenue. Fell Avenue will be one way south from Mulberry Street to College Avenue and from North Street to Beaufort. Only move-in traffic allowed. Fell Avenue will be closed to all traffic between College Avenue and North Street. More than 300 students and staff will serve as move-in volunteers, including Association of Residence Halls members, student athletes, and athletic staff. The next story is entitled, Prosecutors, Parents Support Law to Protect Victims in Courtroom, by Edith Brady Lunny. Springfield. A Bloomington father has a message for lawmakers who may not understand the emotional trauma that awaits victims of sexual assault as they walk to a witness stand to testify against their attacker. The father, whose identity is not being disclosed by the Pantograph to protect his young daughter, who was molested in 2016, has firsthand knowledge of the long and difficult path that starts with an accusation and ends with a guilty verdict against the man who victimizes a child. A bill passed by the Illinois House but stalled in the Senate last year would have provided some relief for victims of sexual assault who face another layer of trauma when they are questioned in court by alleged perpetrators who serve as their own lawyer. No victim of a sexual assault, whether you are 6, 40, or 80 years old, should have to deal with that, said the father, whose 6-year-old daughter was questioned by Johnny Icard during his recent jury trial on predatory criminal sexual assault charges. Icard, 78, was convicted of the charges that could send him to prison for 60 years. The father said he will be contacting lawmakers to share his daughter's experience as a witness. I'm going to let them know their decision to stall this bill cost a kid a lot. She was victimized again, this time in court, in front of me, said the father. Earlier this year, Assistant McLean County State's Attorneys Jacob Harlow and Kristen Alferink accompanied the child's parents to Springfield to urge lawmakers to support House Bill 4339. The legislation would allow standby counsel to question alleged victims in cases where defendants choose to serve as their own lawyer. The proposed law requires a judge to first rule that such courtroom interaction would cause the alleged victim serious emotional or mental distress. By their very nature, sex assault cases are filled with anxiety for victims and high stakes for defendants who face decades in prison if convicted. Defendants' constitutional right to represent themselves includes the right to cross-examine the person who has accused them. The questions surrounding the constitutionality of the bill will be addressed by sponsors of the legislation when the General Assembly returns to session, said Beverly Helm, spokeswoman for State Senator Patricia Van Pelt, Democrat of Chicago. Van Pelt will work with State Representative John Connor, Democrat of Romeoville, sponsor of the bill that unanimously passed the House, said Helm. In the meantime, Harlow helps alleged victims prepare for what is often a traumatic courtroom experience. It's difficult. First, we have to make them aware it could happen, said the prosecutor. Counseling is provided to child victims through the McLean County Children's Advocacy Center. A provision that allows closed-circuit testimony for child victims who would be traumatized by being in the room with a defendant does not apply to self-representation cases. In some cases, the chance to face an accuser in court provides a sense of empowerment and helps with the healing process, said Harlow. But for others, the possibility that the defendant could ask questions dealing with highly personal information is too overwhelming for alleged victims, said Harlow. A second victim could face questions from her alleged perpetrator in a McLean County courtroom when Jeffrey Martin goes on trial for criminal sexual assault. A trial date has not been set for the 53-year-old defendant, but his statements in court indicate he intends to call the woman as a witness. Martin goes on trial in September on multiple counts of child pornography related to images found by police on a computer in the Normal home where he was staying with the alleged sex assault victim. Over Martin's objections, a judge has appointed standby counsel for Martin in the child pornography case based on Martin's ongoing disruption of court proceedings. The next story is entitled, Livingston Eyes Tax to Pay for Elderly Aid, by Edith Brady Lunny. Pontiac. Two ballot measures will offer Livingston County voters the chance to weigh in on the future of a program for elderly residents and how to fund it if it continues beyond November. The Livingston County Board will vote Thursday on whether a referendum will be on the November ballot to add 2.5 cents per $100 equalized assessed valuation to the county's tax rate. The new tax would fund the Livingston County Community Health Care Program, a program currently set to end at the end of November. For the owner of a $150,000 house, the proposed increase would add $12.50 to a tax bill. A petition with almost 1,200 signatures from residents supporting the program, which provides nursing and homemaking services to low-income seniors, was sufficient to put an advisory referendum on the ballot, asking if it should continue. Melinda Hillman, administrator of the Livingston County Health Department, said the agency has put together a plan to keep the home nursing portion of the program going, with about $80,000 from the county's public health levy. The homemaking services, which include bathing, meal preparation, laundry, and housekeeping, will end at the end of November. Residents pay for nursing and household help according to a sliding scale based on their income. Hillman said seniors are disappointed their household assistance will end. Families don't live as close by as they used to. Some of those people will just go without, said Hillman. The home-based program started in 2009 as a way to bridge the gap in senior health care after the county closed its nursing home. At its peak, the county paid $310,000 in total program costs for more than 100 participants. After the board voted to end the program last year, Hillman began winding down the number of people served. Currently, 8 people receive homemaker help and 28 are seen by a nurse in their home. The debate over the board's decision to halt existing funding and raise taxes if the program continues has raised concerns in the community, said Hillman. It boils down to the board's priorities for funding, said the agency director. Board Chairman Robert Young said the program was meant to temporarily fill a void left by the closure of the nursing home. Like every county, money is tight here, said Young, acknowledging that to cut people from the program is cruel. I know that, but you've got to have the money to pay for it. With about $20 million in reserves built with revenue from a nearby landfill operation, Livingston County is not hurting for money to cover the cost of the home nursing program, said board member Joe Steichen, who voted to end the program. It's absolutely not a money issue. We can afford it, said Steichen. The issue, he said, is that the program competes with a local nursing home. Hillman worries that the need for the home nursing and homemaking program still exists for low-income seniors in Livingston County. Our goal is to prevent premature nursing home placement for those who can safely stay at home. This program kept them at home, said Hillman. Here's a story entitled, Eric's Two, A New Start. Owner, Westside Restaurant A Dream Long in the Making, by Maria Nagel. Bloomington. When the sign with the name of his new restaurant in West Bloomington went up on Monday, Eric Trujillo said his lights welled up with tears. It was a dream come true, said Trujillo, about expanding his restaurant business with a second, larger establishment, Eric's Two Family Restaurant and Lounge, at 921 Maple Hill Road. Trujillo said he will operate his new restaurant along with his original eatery, Eric's, across from Miller Park at 903 West Wood Street. The original restaurant had issues with being in a neighborhood setting, not having enough parking and noise from late-night patrons in its outdoor beer garden. The new restaurant is in a commercial area. It can seat up to 100 patrons and has parking for 92 vehicles. It will soon have an outdoor beer garden. The restaurant's 100-foot-tall neon sign can be seen from Interstate 55. Motorists on the route stopping for a bite to eat and guests staying at several nearby motels make up 60% of his new business, Trujillo said. I am focusing on having weddings, birthday parties, anniversaries, bringing out different types of food, Mexican, Italian, and American, he said. The new restaurant will employ 15 people. Three food items popular at Eric's will be served at Eric's, too. Eric's Matador Quesadilla, Eric's Burrito, and Chimichanga. The menu focuses on steaks at $20 per entree. Breakfast items range from $7.99 to $14.99, with the most expensive featuring a 9-ounce ribeye steak and eggs platter. Lunches from $8 to $12, and dinner entrees from $10 to $20. The restaurant is currently open from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Thursday, and 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Friday through Sunday. In 2 weeks, the hours will change permanently to 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. 7 days a week. Breakfast items will be available all day. Reservations can be made by calling 309-808-4223. The site was formerly occupied by Cousins Restaurant, which Trujillo began managing in November while a purchase agreement was pending with Blarim Bekiri. Trujillo said business has picked up at the new eatery since he received his liquor license in July. The license had been delayed until proof of the transfer of ownership was provided to the City Liquor Commission. He never dreamed he would own two restaurants. "The dream, anybody who works hard can get it," said Trujillo. "I am still working hard, and I am still trying to show that to my 6 kids. The next article is headlined, "Pritzker Hits Rauner on Taxes. Governor Candidate Talks Property Levies at Bloomington Rally," by Derek Bay. Bloomington. After months of attacks about his own property taxes, Democratic Governor nominee J.B. Pritzker is turning the tables on Republican Governor Bruce Rauner. He wanted to raise property taxes across the state, push down $1 billion of state expenditures to local governments to raise property taxes across the state, said Pritzker of a Rauner proposal to make school districts and universities responsible for their own pension costs. "This governor doesn't know how to govern, and it's time for a change." Rauner has hit Pritzker, a Chicago heir to the Hyatt hotel chain, for getting a property tax break on a mansion on the grounds that a neighboring property Pritzker also owned was uninhabitable after its toilets were disconnected. Pritzker has said he was renovating the property and described the tax appeal as routine. Pritzker was the final speaker, but perhaps not the main attraction, for more than 100 people who packed his downtown Bloomington campaign headquarters on McLean County Democrat Day, a prelude to Thursday's statewide Democrat Day at the Illinois State Fair in Springfield. The greatest ovation was for U.S. Senator Dick Durbin, who is not on the November 6th ballot, but endorsed many Democrats who are, including Pritzker, Congressional candidate Betsy Dirksen Londrigan of Springfield, and McLean County Clerk nominee Nikita Richards of Bloomington. "Governors of both political parties have called on me for a helping hand. I have yet to receive the first phone call from this governor," Durbin said of Rauner. "That's a lost opportunity for me, for the state, and it reflects that what we're talking about in this election is not just a matter of changing the name of the governor, it's changing the course of the state of Illinois." Durbin said the best way to bring change to Washington, D.C. during Republican President Donald Trump's term is to elect Democrats to the House and Senate. Londrigan, a one-time Durbin fundraiser, is running against incumbent Republican U.S. Representative Rodney Davis of Taylorville in the 18th Congressional District that includes part of the Twin Cities. "The question I get asked in this election cycle that I've never run into before is, are we going to be all right? Is America going to be all right?" He said, "The answer is, when it gets down to it, the vast majority of American people share the same bedrock values. They're not the values of fear and hate." Richards and Eric Rankin, chair of the McLean County Democratic Party, spoke about how local elected officials can help. Richards is running against County Clerk Kathy Michael, a 3-term Republican. The first line of defense in defending these core values is local government. That's why I decided to run, said Richards. Libertarian Cash Jackson and Conservative Party candidate Sam McCann are also running for governor. The next article is entitled, Governor Touts GOP Goals, Knocks Madigan at Fair, by John O'Connor. Springfield. Illinois Republicans, led by Governor Bruce Rauner, rallied the faithful Wednesday by pledging to make the GOP the state's majority party in the November election. Republicans at the annual Governor's Day at the Illinois State Fair were buoyed by predicted thunderstorms that failed to materialize for their fairgrounds festivities Wednesday afternoon, and by the deflation of Democrats who hoped to one-up their opponents on their day Thursday with keynoter Joe Biden. The former Democratic vice president canceled because of illness. Freedom and opportunity, limited government, lower taxes, individual liberty, personal responsibility, the values that have made America the greatest nation on earth are the values of our Republican Party and are the reason we're going to become the majority party in the state of Illinois in the future, Rauner said, as he took the stage after Republican candidates for Attorney General, Secretary of State, Comptroller, and Treasurer. Rauner stuck to a familiar theme by attacking Michael Madigan, the Illinois Democratic House Speaker, whose success at thwarting the conservative agenda Rauner brought to office in 2015 has earned him more mentions by name at GOP gatherings than most Republican politicians themselves. Madigan, who is also the state Democratic Party chairman, is largely the reason the party holds 67 House seats to 50 for the Republicans, rules the Senate 37-22, and holds 4 of 6 statewide offices. Not surprisingly, Rauner tied Madigan, speaker longer than any other state legislator in U.S. history, to his gubernatorial opponent, billionaire businessman J.B. Pritzker, claiming that the two Democrats are in cahoots to raise income tax and crush jobs. Here's an item entitled, Area Youths Win at State Fair, by Pantograph Staff. Springfield. 4 Central Illinois youths were among those recognized during the Governor's Sale of Champions and the Commodity Auction on Tuesday night at the Illinois State Fair. Adam Miller of Livingston County's Grand Champion Steer was purchased by Governor Bruce and Diana Rauner for $60,000. Ella Bobel of Logan County's Grand Champion Barrow was purchased by CME Group, Chicago Mercantile Exchange, for $25,000. Sarah Irwin of Logan County's Land of Lincoln's Supreme Champion Dairy Cow Print was acquired by Prairie Farms Dairy for $3,000. Griffin Judlowski of Atlanta's Best in Show Dairy Goat's Milk was purchased by Turner Farms in memory of Jim Turner for $550. Many exhibitors use the money for their college education or invest it back into their fair projects for next year. The goats, sheep, barrows, and steers are being donated to the University of Illinois College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. And here is a public safety notice entitled Residential Burglary. A Bloomington man is charged with breaking into a Bloomington home and injuring a woman. Navarro Howard, 56, of Melissa Drive, is charged with residential burglary and domestic battery. The suspect is accused of entering a woman's home August 14th and pushing her to the ground. He was jailed in lieu of posting $25,035. Here's a story entitled, Balloons a Pollution Threat? Releases seen as danger to wildlife, like straws, bags. By Candace Choi. New York. Now that plastic straws may be headed for extinction, could Americans' love of balloons be deflated? The joyous celebration of releasing balloons into the air has long bothered environmentalists who say the pieces that fall back to Earth can be deadly to seabirds and turtles that eat them. So, as companies vow to banish plastic straws, there are signs balloons will be among the products to get more scrutiny, even though they're a very small part of environmental pollution. This year, college football powerhouse Clemson University is ending its tradition of releasing 10,000 balloons into the air before games, a move that's part of its sustainability efforts. In Virginia, a campaign that urges alternatives to balloon releases at weddings is expanding. And a town in Rhode Island outright banned the sale of all balloons earlier this year, citing the harm to marine life. There are all kinds of alternatives to balloons, a lot of ways to express yourself, says Kenneth Lacoste, first warden of New Shoreham, Rhode Island, who cites posters, piñatas, and decorated paper. Following efforts to limit plastic bags, the push by environmentalists against straws has gained traction in recent months, partly because they're seen as unnecessary for most. Companies including Starbucks and Disney are promising to phase out plastic straws, which can be difficult to recycle because of their size, and often end up as trash in the ocean. A handful of U.S. cities recently passed or are considering bans, and the push may bring attention to other items people may not have considered, like festive balloons. The issue of straws has really broadened the marine debris issue, says Emma Tong of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. People might not realize balloons are a danger, she says, because of their light and whimsical image. Balloons are not among the top 10 kinds of debris found in coastal cleanups, but Tung says they're common and especially hazardous to marine animals, which can also get entangled in balloon strings. Chelsea Rockman, an assistant professor of ecology at the University of Toronto, says people should think systemically about waste and pollution, but that efforts to bring attention to specific products shouldn't be dismissed as too minor. If we said that about everything, we wouldn't get anything done, she says. Already, a few states restrict balloon releases to some extent, according to the Balloon Council, which represents the industry and advocates for the responsible handling of its products to uphold the integrity of the professional balloon community. That means never releasing them into the air and ensuring the strings have a weight tied to them so the balloons don't accidentally float away. Lorna O'Hara, executive director of the Balloon Council, doesn't dispute that marine creatures might mistake balloons for jellyfish and eat them, but she says that doesn't mean balloons are necessarily causing their deaths. Clean Virginia Waterways still thinks balloons can be harmful. Included in its report last year, a photo of a soaring bird with a deflated balloon trailing behind it. The report addresses the rising concern of balloons, which also often use helium, a non-renewable resource. It notes the difficulty of changing a social norm and that even typing congrats in a Facebook post results in an animation of balloons. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Pantograph for August 16th. Please stay tuned.